That Vet Life.
Hey y'all, and welcome to another episode of That Vet Life. Now, student mentorship is not something that I feel like we talk about all that much within the veterinary community. A lot of times it's talking about vet students and how they can be mentored by veterinarians who are currently in the field. But how do we as students help to be leaders to each other and just mentor those who are around us? To talk about that, I would like to welcome today's guest, Christy Crow, a vet student at Purdue University. So welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is really exciting because unfortunately we never actually got to meet when we were both at the AVMA convention back in Colorado, back in July, was it, I think?
Yeah.
And so it's really nice to finally get to meet you. It is, granted, it's over Skype, but it's so nice to meet a fellow vet student who is in the U.S.
Yes, no, thank you for having me. I'm very excited. I was sad we did not get to meet really at the convention, but you guys as delegates are extremely busy, so definitely understand.
Yeah, it is a really fun life being a SAVMA member and a SAVMA delegate, but and you are actually a SAVMA president, so you are equally as busy, and I'm always amazed at what you guys come out of those meetings with and then working with the delegates and just between school. So that's another a little bit there of student mentorship.
Yeah.
But to kind of give people a little bit of a background, so you said that you were at undergrad at Purdue University before you went to vet school, but where did your story start? Where did you kind of think about vet school and why vet school?
Yeah, so I'm sure you can definitely relate to this, but I think our memories are shot now that we're in vet school. But I think that I always loved animals. I mean, I was that person that loved animals. And, you know, I was that child that said I wanted to be a veterinarian. But, you know, throughout high school, my mind started wandering between medicine, like human medicine, and then, you know, veterinary medicine. But ultimately, I knew I wanted to work with people. I knew I wanted to work in the medical field. And I knew animals were just an added bonus. So that I think that's really what ultimately pushed me towards veterinary medicine. And I'm glad I'm in this path because it just shown to be so amazing. And just the community is incredible. So, yeah, I mean, I always knew I wanted to do something medically related. You know, I started as vet med and then maybe human medicine and then vet med. And now I'm back in vet med. So that's kind of where it started.
But was there any point that you were like, you know what, I'm going to move away from human medicine and I'm going to actually focus on veterinary medicine? And is that why you chose Purdue to go to undergrad?
Yeah. So the decision, since I'm from Indiana, if you want to do medicine for humans, you would go to Indiana University, IU, and then Purdue University has the vet school. So it's a big rivalry too. It's the two biggest rivalries in Indiana. But yeah, so I ultimately decided to go to Purdue because they had the veterinary school. And then I just never looked back since. I worked towards all of undergrad. I never changed my mind the 4 years I was in undergrad. And now I'm about to, now I've already started my third year of vet school here. So I'd say I stuck with it.
I know there's a couple schools that do that where you can go to the undergrad and then to the associated vet school. I think there's Cornell in Canada. I think you can do that at Guelph. But I also know I don't know, at those schools, it seems really hard to actually get into the veterinary program after you've done the undergraduate program. Do you find that similar at Purdue, or do you not really notice that?
So the way our admissions work, and I definitely can't give any solid facts on it because I'm not on an admissions board, but how our school works is our class is the size of 84, and so 42 are out of state and 42 are in state. You know, there could be 1,000 people. I think this newest class, there was over 1,000 people that applied. And I don't know the distribution of that, but I remember my year I interviewed, there's probably 800 to 900 that applied for Purdue University. And about, I think 300 were in state and the rest were out of state. So I don't necessarily know if preference is, I don't really think necessarily preference is given to Purdue students per se, but they definitely look at the coursework that you're taking at your universities and how big your university is, because, you know, a lot of times maybe smaller colleges, you know, there's more one-on-one time and it might be easier for students to do better. I don't know. I think there's a lot that plays into it. So I don't want to say definitely that Purdue gives preference to Purdue students I went to for undergrad. I think it really just is based on your application.
Yeah, and I think those kind of schools are just putting out their programs are such high quality. Not to say that there's other schools that aren't high quality, but they, if you are the vet school for an associated undergrad, you kind of, you know what kind of level your students are coming from, so you probably accept a, like, are expecting a bit more. So maybe that's why. I just know I've had like students who have, they've gone to Cornell or they've gone to Guelph for undergrad, but then they didn't get into the associated vet school even though they were so like top of their class or something, and they're just like, well, why is that? And so I wondered if schools like Purdue, if you saw any kind of correlation, but that's beside the point. So you went to Purdue for undergrad, now you're Purdue in vet school, and you're in your third year of your programs. Are you kind of excited to move towards clinicals?
Oh, 100%. I am. I can definitely say that I'm one of those students who does not necessarily thrive in like classroom set like settings, like learning wise. And I'm okay with that. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not embarrassed of that. I definitely struggled more than probably majority of my classmates during first and this past year. I more excel on that hands-on learning, like when we're actually in labs or we're actually out working with the animals, and actually doing things in the clinics. I think is where I will be able to show my my true strengths. And I've had many clinicians and professors at my school tell me the same thing. They say, Chrissy, don't worry about it. You know, that's just how it is. Some of you are going to excel your first 2 years and struggle. You have to, and then vice versa. So I'm really looking forward to this year and then the next year, because I think I'm really going to be able to bring out my strengths.
I can kind of echo that. I definitely feel like for myself, I'm much more of that hands-on type. But Purdue University has, I mean, they're a very, very well-recognized university. But when do you guys start clinics? Do you start it three-quarters of the way through your junior year, or do you start it like halfway?
I guess a simple way to put it is we start clinics fourth year. But in third year, we do something called we have a class called clinical skills, so we do shadowing then, and we just started that this week. So we shadow different rotations in the hospital, so we're working with the fourth years. So we're not necessarily, we don't have our own patients per se, but we're helping the fourth years, and we get assigned treatment duties to help them. So the real clinics start we'll start in May of 2019 for me.
Oh, that's pretty exciting, though. You get to actually, like, you get to learn the hospitals a little bit before you go in, because I know that's one of the most terrifying things when you start fourth year is the reality that you really haven't spent that much time in the hospitals, like shadowing vets or anything. So you just kind of have to learn it trial by fire. But for you guys to actually get to be in there and be like, oh, this is where this room is, or this is where this is stored. So when you are on final year or fourth year, sorry, I go back and forth because of the UK system, but but just to know where things are, that'll be a huge stress reliever just to know that.
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, it's funny because I used to work in undergrad. I worked in the small animal reception for the hospital, and the fourth years, you know, bless their hearts, like, they are thrown into it, and, like, they just wouldn't know where, like, little, like, they don't know how to use, like, they didn't know how to use staplers or, like, copy machines. Like, they just didn't know where anything was. And I think it's good that now they kind of changed it a bit. So we're getting exposure to the hospital early. So, like, these little things aren't going to be so stressful when we're actually in clinics. So I do appreciate that part of our curriculum right now.
Yeah, we have a thing called, like, final year prep, which happens between your third year of school and before you go into your final year of vet school, where you kind of are taught like where everything is in the vet school if you haven't done too many placements there. But we also have our EMS or extramural studies, which are a number of weeks we are required to accrue in a clinical setting. And a lot of opportunities are available through our university. So you can be, like, I've been on equine ICU units. I've been on the anesthesia rotations. And so I'm getting to learn those kind of things as a second year. And then again, as a third year this year, I'll be able to do something similar. So just getting to be exposed to the hospital environment before you are launched into it as a final year student is a huge lifesaver. So if there's any students who are wondering if they should do things like that, like, totally take advantage of it. Do it now.
Oh, 100%. Like the more hands-on experience you get, I think the easier it's going to be for you in the long run.
So if we switch gears a little bit then, in starting vet school, was that when you started your Instagram page? Dr. Christy.
Yeah, actually, no. So I started the Instagram page last semester. So I like my whole like change of like mindset and goals happened in the beginning of vet school because I kind of just came out of undergrad like just so fatigued and unhappy with myself. And I mean, I really did enjoy my 4 years of undergrad. I did a lot of things and definitely enjoyed it more than just academically speaking. But coming out of it, I just was like, I know I need to make a change. I know I need to like start getting my life together for vet school and trying to be the best version of myself. Otherwise, I'm never going to make it out of vet school. So like I started doing that first year of vet school, like trying to exercise regularly, eat better, like meal prep, kind of be more mindful. I actually started visiting or like making appointments with our psychologist at school every 2 weeks just to make sure my mental health was in check. And I am not ashamed of that at all. I vocalize that to everyone at school because I want to encourage them to seek that benefit that we have. But yeah, so I saw that I was sharing these experiences with my classmates and my friends, and like they wanted to know more. And so I thought that I should, make a like an Instagram account or get on social media and try to like share my experiences further. And I almost didn't do it, but my boyfriend actually pushed me and encouraged me to do it, and I'm so glad I did because, I mean, I was kind of afraid of the fear of like no one really caring or not helping anyone. But I mean, I've just seen such growth, and I'm so happy that how many people have said I have helped them, or even one. I just wanted to help one person, and I think Dr. Christie is really doing that, and I'm hope to continue that even when I'm a veterinarian out in practice. So that's where Dr. Christie started. Officially, actually, had a platform last semester, but I kind of was always just in the back of my head ever since I was in vet school.
Well, that's really cool. And I'm looking at your Instagram page right now, and you have your label is just kind of like you're a third year vet student, but then it says you're also a frequent flyer. Why did you put that in your bio?
Yeah, so I am like a travel enthusiast. I think actually maybe I don't know, my two passions. I mean, I love traveling. I've always loved traveling since I was young. My parents have just been awesome and have let us go places when we were really young, so kind of instilled this travel bug in me. But I've been to probably over 20, 25 countries by now. So I always take an opportunity to explore a new place, learn about new cultures whenever I can. And that's actually an interesting thing. I didn't ever think I could necessarily incorporate that into veterinary medicine, but I am learning that that is possible for me now. So that's a new avenue I'm exploring. But yeah, so freaking flyer, just basically, I just love traveling. It's something that's so important to me, and I'll never put that on the back burner. So,
And what's been one of your favorite places to travel to?
I am obsessed with Africa. Well, actually, I mean, I've been to a couple countries in Africa, but South Africa I've been to twice. I've been to Swaziland and Mozambique. I might try to be going to Kenya within the next year, but South Africa is where I spent 3 weeks this past summer, and I absolutely had a blast. I just love seeing the wildlife and their natural habitat, and the thrill and excitement of that kind of medicine is just something I could definitely see myself doing.
And so most of your travels have been veterinary related then, right?
Actually, most of them have not been veterinary related.
Oh.
So yeah, so most of them have just been, have been for just pleasure or, but yeah, I mean, there's a handful that have been veterinary related, but most of the other ones have not been.
Okay, but I think that kind of it broadens your horizons, even if they're not veterinary related, because you mentioned in the very beginning part of the reason you were like you loved human medicine because of the relations that you can have between like with people, but then you realized you could do that in veterinary medicine too. But so getting to travel, you're getting to see so different many different parts of the world and just work with and talk with different people. And how do you think that has influenced your veterinary medicine as is?
Yeah, so I think the more I travel, the more I see what this world has to offer, and the more I realize how much help that we can provide as veterinarians. And that's kind of where I got into looking really more heavily into public health. So I initially came into vet school thinking I wanted to be a neurologist, and that I squashed that dream after week one. I was like, nope, So I was like, no. Nah. So I'm still one of those people that like I'm interested in so many different things, so I have no idea. But yeah, the traveling has really shown me that my passion is really in meeting more, like, or seeing the world and meeting people and understanding how people live their lives and how animals play a role. And so that's kind of where I am right now, looking into public health. My advisor is absolutely amazing. She's was our public health teacher, and she has like a couple master's and PhDs and all these different things, and she's really helped me like open my eyes to all these possibilities. So I mean, I've been looking into opportunities like the Peace Corps, Vets Without Borders. I even really have I'm thinking about one day moving to Africa to do work there. So it's just there's not anything that's really set in stone yet, but those are just kind of my ideas as of now.
No, I think that's pretty cool. Like you have those are goals and ambitions that you have and you're working towards them, which I feel like sometimes in veterinary medicine we're like, I'm going to get into vet school, and then you get into vet school and you're like, now what? I guess I'll work at a general practice. But you actually have something that you're like, hey, that looks really cool. I want to try and work for that. I think that's pretty awesome. Even if it doesn't come to fruition, you're at least like working towards that. And so the last thing that you have on your bio is that you are a wellness advocate. And we definitely kind of touched on that already when you mentioned that, like working with the school psychologist that's available. And I want to make that like a really important point that, like you mentioned, so much like veterinary medicine, it's very, very tough and it's hard. But the fact that you have that available, and I think definitely the mindset about going and just talking with someone like that is changing, thankfully. But to have someone that you can go to and just like it's basically like a checkup, being like, hey, what state am I in right now? Am I doing good? Cool. But you're taking care of yourself now so that you don't have to go to someone because something's wrong.
So the whole wellness advocate thing is honestly, it's kind of been just my biggest motivation and inspiration just to keep going in vet school. And there's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, like I kind of touched on earlier, I was just super unhappy kind of coming out of undergrad, and I knew I had to make a change. And what I've learned is it's a process. Like, it's not, you don't just start working, you know, towards being healthier and then that's it. Like, you have ups and downs, ups and downs. And to be completely transparent with you, there was times in vet school that I honestly thought I didn't want to do it anymore. Like, so my first semester of second year, I really considered dropping out. I was unhappy. I did so well in first year, and I was like, you know, on this health track. And then a lot of things happened in my life. Like my parents moved to Japan, so my support system was gone. Like they before they were just an hour away, and I had to undergo like a major surgery, and you know, I was taking pain meds for that, so I think my thinking was a bit off. But I went through a lot of things that first semester of second year that kind of made me think I didn't want to do it anymore. But I'm glad I stuck with it and I pushed through. And you know, I'm glad I had like my friends around me and awesome professors. And you know, I sought out that psychologist and I was able to work through those dark thoughts and kind of push myself out of it. And that's like something I'm not ashamed to share. I think it's really important to understand that it's a process and these things are always going to happen. Life happens. And I'm totally aware of it now too. But that was kind of another push of why I started Dr. Christie. I want to be able to share these experiences with people and know they're not alone and know that if they think they want to change careers or they, or this or that, like it's not, there's nothing wrong with it. So yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to do wellness advocate to show that you can work on your physical health, but more importantly, I really think mental health plays a role first because, I mean, the way you think about things really dictates how you're going to live your life.
I think that is huge. And like, if that was like the entire podcast right there, I think we would be perfectly set. but I want to dive into this a little bit more. Cause like you mentioned your support network that kind of helped you through that time. But, and then you continue to have that network even when things are good. And I kind of want to dive into that a little bit more in talking about student mentorship. So, like you and I, we're both students who obviously are doing things that we're looking to help other students, looking to help other veterinarians. And so what are, there are obviously organizations within our vet schools that allow us to do that more. So for you, like we mentioned that, well, beforehand, we talked that you're involved with SAVMA, you're involved with Hills, and you're involved with a really cool mentorship in Purdue that's called This Is How We Roll. And then the last one is Snout School. So we'll go through these layer by layer, and we'll just kind of talk about the different ones and how do we use these organizations then to help other students, and like, why do we help other students? So I guess we'll start with SAVMA. Purdue has had a SAVMA chapter a lot longer than the DICVET has had a SAVMA chapter, so you have a little bit more knowledge and experience about what's going on there. But I will let you, El Presidente of Purdue's SAVMA chapter, talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, so the way our SAVMA chapter, so if anyone who's listening doesn't know what SAVMA means, it's Student American Veterinary Medical Association. So basically at my school, we are the umbrella organization for all of our other student organizations. So SAVMA is basically like the student government. And so we have 21 other clubs at our school. So what my job is basically to be kind of like the presidents of the presidents and help them out with, you know, anything they need. And also basically to help run any student things that are going on. Like, so it doesn't even really have to do with clubs. My role is very broad, actually. And at times it can be a bit overwhelming. But, yeah, so, like, I help anything that is involved with the clubs. But I also do things that, you know, the dean wants a student perspective from. Or I'm also involved in, like, a diversity action committee. So all these things are part of the president's role. And also just basically being a representative of our school. So, I mean, I saw this opportunity. I knew I wanted to do it the first year. I was my first semester of first year, which is really strange that I already wanted to do that. But, you know, I set it to be my goal, and, you know, here I am, and I don't have any regrets. At times it's exhausting, but I know that I have a true passion to work with people. That is really my number one passion in helping and making things better for our school and our students. So that's kind of where I got involved in SAVMA.
And then SAVMA also does a lot of things like with wellness weeks, and just that's part of one of the tenets of being in SAVMA is that you focus on health and welfare. So what are some of the things that your SAVMA chapter has been able to do to help the campus with that tenet of SAVMA?
Yeah, so we actually, our wellness committee is actually fairly new within the last 2 years. And I know they're going to be doing a lot more stuff. So we just have a committee under SAVMA that does that. But, you know, we have wellness weeks. You know, we have like resources to talk about, you know, if you need to seek help or talk to someone. And our psychologist is absolutely amazing. So she does a lot of different talks with us. We actually just have her for certain class slots in general, just to talk about just making sure your mental health is in check and all that. And then we have like massage chairs. And so I think they have like massage days like every maybe 2 or 3 weeks, but some just like little things like that. I know we're going to try to expand on it. I know we kind of wanted to bring like a nutritionist in and like talk to our students about like the importance of like nourishing your body with the correct things and some ideas like that. So
yeah,
that's kind of what we're doing, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I mean, like, we're starting to do similar things like that, but our school has had a welfare week already in place, which I'm sure, like, Purdue has had their similar things, but now that we have our SAVMA chapter, we're able to get on board a lot more and just take part in, like, we look at the other chapters and we're like, all right, what do you guys need? How can we help? Because being in SAVMA, we have the resources, whether it's time, people, or money, that we're able to like pour into these other organizations and help them help students. Mm-hmm. And then as a SAVMA chapter ourselves, we're running different events, whether it's just like our school actually does a thing called Free Food Fridays, where certain Fridays of the semester, we literally just buy a whole bunch of food, which in the UK, you don't have Thanksgiving. So when for last year, we basically had a bunch of like pumpkin pies with whipped topping and hot chocolate. And we just did that for the entire like noon lunchtime kind of thing. And we just gave it out to students because why not?
That's awesome.
So those kind of things are something that we've been able to implement. And it's just, it's so much fun to take something that, like, out of the monotony of the day for the students and be like, hey, you know what, guys? You're important, and here's some free food. Enjoy it. And just to see their faces light up is just, like, the coolest thing ever. So whether it's something like that, or we'll do, like, fun games for part of Welfare Week. And actually, one of the other clubs does something where they have a post-it note kind of board, and they'll ask a question mm-hmm. each day, and then students can walk by and write down their answer to this question, whether it's like, how do you keep your mental health in check or something, or what do you do to relax? And then people write down, and then at the end of the day they pick a winner kind of at random draw. But it's something that it's getting students to think about. Like, obviously you can read the question and you can walk by, or you can read the question, think about it, and write something down. But just to take those 5 seconds to remind them, like, hey, think about yourself, think about self-care, and like, how do you support each other? That's a huge part of it. And I don't know if your school has something similar, but we have this thing called a PALS program, or Peer Assisted Learning Scheme. And each of the parts of the university in Edinburgh have their own. So there's, like, for the veterinary program, it's mm-hmm. called Vet Pals. And I've been fortunate enough to be a part of that first when I was an incoming student, and now, like, last year when I was not a new student. And then again this year, I'll be kind of, like, the senior person that isn't, like, the boots on the ground, but is definitely there to help. But it basically it's this kind of support network where, because we have our graduate entry program, which is different than the rest of the program. So there's, at the beginning of the year, there's like 50 students who come in who have a previous degree, and they're mm-hmm. called graduate entry. And they basically go through an entire year as 50 students. They don't really interact too much with the rest of the class. But at the end of that year, they join the 5-year programs, second years. So they go from being this really, really close-knit group of 50 people to suddenly being in a class of 150, where there's a bit of an age discrepancy between the JET program and the 5-year program. But as Vet Pals, we're in this really unique position where we have like sessions with them, where we talk about things like, from like basic things like, how do we study, and like, how do you find housing when it comes time, or trying to think of other ones, how do you prepare for this next exam, or just how do you, like, what are things that are going on within the JET program that are different than the 5-year program? Because part of it is that there's just a difference in age that happens. Right. So you're just in a different stage of life. And so we handle the JETs differently than we handle the 5-year program. So I don't know, does Purdue have anything similar? Granted, you don't have a JET program and it's just a different ecosystem. But do you have like a peer assisted learning program?
I'm trying to think. I don't know if we necessarily have anything structured per se like that.
Yeah, I don't know, it's probably called something different, or it's probably structured differently for you guys.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that I know as a student coming in, as an international student coming in, that was like a huge, huge help to be like someone they've been in that position already, to be able to sit down and be like, you know what, this next exam is going to suck, but you will survive, and it is okay. We'll work through like different study methods. Or we'll work through like just things that you're worried about. Like literally we just have some sessions where we just sit down and we're like, all right, ask us questions. We'll see if we can answer them. And just to kind of ease the anxiety about what's going on.
Oh yeah.
But I know as a student, that was like a huge, huge help to have, especially like, cause I moved away from being in the States, and now I'm in this other country that I've never lived in. And it was, the first year was rough. That's just a simple way of putting it. So I can echo you that, I mean, I obviously different situation, but
right.
That first year of vet school can be really rough. So to know that you have someone who they're making that their purpose of what they're doing is to help you. So beneficial. So beneficial.
Yeah, I guess we do. Now that I think about it, I don't know why I didn't think of this. We do have like a big and little program, like, so basically the class that's ahead of you, you can have like a big bro or big sis, and they kind of are your mentors. It's not necessarily it's kind of whatever you want to make it. You know, are really into it. Some people aren't into it at all. But that's kind of what we have for like a mentorship thing within the vet classes. And then during the first year, or for our first year vet students, when they come in during their orientation, we have like about 30, I guess we'd say, vet counselors that help with their orientation. And half of them are second years and half of them are third years. And then so that week of the first year orientation, like those counselors kind of serve as upperclassmen mentors for them. So,
oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I just thinking like we also have like we call it mummies and daddies. So when you're a first year student, you get an upperclassman who's your mummy and another one who's your daddy, and they invite you over for dinner kind of thing. But after that, it's just kind of it's one of those like come sit down, we'll feed you and ask us questions kind of deal, which it sounds like yours turns into a little bit more of a little bit more mentorship past the first meeting.
Yeah, maybe it's kind of like that too, though. It's kind of just like, oh my gosh, what's this anesthesia exam like? Or okay, how do I need to prepare for it? And then that's it. Because you know, vet students, like, you know, it just there's so much going on that you don't necessarily want to ask people a lot of things, or you don't want to ask a lot of their time because one, you don't have that time yourself, and you know, they don't have that time. But
yeah, so I guess like that was the one question then. So because obviously within our vet schools. I don't know. Do you feel super comfortable, or do you think people feel super comfortable going to upperclassmen and asking questions in the same way that people will on Instagram?
That's a good question. So I'm probably a very biased opinion because myself, I'm very outspoken and I most times don't have a filter. So I feel free to ask anyone anything. I also know I am like, I would say I'm an oddball of vet students at my school, or just maybe at all schools. Like, I'm just very out there, so I don't ever hesitate to ask. I think other people, you know, might not ask because, you know, they don't want to seem like they don't know something or that they're weak or that they need help, but, like, I'm all about asking for help. I'm the first student that will say wrong things in class because I'd rather get it wrong in class than get it wrong when I'm out in practice, so I have no shame when it comes to asking for help.
Yeah, do you think, like, students in general then, because obviously, like, I'm kind of a similar way where I'm more willing to just kind of, like, send an email to someone. But do you think, like, on Instagram, but having that ambiguity, like, the protection of the internet, people are more willing to then ask us questions about vet school than maybe they would if they were physically on campus?
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely say yes, because I mean, I get a lot of messages from people asking advice. I mean, more so it's kind of pre-vet students, but there are other vet students to ask too, and I think it's just easier, like, when you're transparent with people, or as much as you can be on social media, they can try to relate to you and understand and feel comfortable and know that, you know, you're not going to judge them or anything. So I think a lot of people are able to assess that better when it comes to social media.
Yeah, and I feel like it can go a couple different ways. Mm-hmm. With obviously the life that we portray on vet school on Instagram for vet school, we try to be as transparent as we can. But I know for myself, sometimes I don't share all the monotonous, boring, or maybe not so great times, just because there's a limited. Mm-hmm. You have to choose for that day what you're gonna upload, and if you have like 500
right.
things happen, like what are you more likely to choose to upload? So maybe they're not getting the full obviously they're not getting the full experience of who you are as a human being through that, but I think with the sense that you and I are both trying to go for is to present a vet student who their purpose of creating this account is that you're highlighting all of the, like, if we're going with the that vet life kind of motto is to inspire, encourage, and challenge. I think people are then, if they only see that side, or maybe that's the majority that they see, they're more willing to go forth and ask a question that maybe they would be less comfortable with if they maybe knew of the person on campus. I don't know
right.
what I'm trying to get at fully, but I mean, you get the gist?
No, I totally understand
okay.
what you're saying. No, I get it. And I 100% agree. I think it's just easier for people to reach out over social media too, because, you know, there's not that, I don't know, there's not that, like, hesitation, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to explain it either, but I know what you're talking about.
So then, I don't know if you've had any any scenario like this, but what if you got a question that it seemed maybe heavier than you were able to deal with, or you just weren't sure how to answer? Who would you go to get advice, or how would you respond to that person?
Yeah, so I've gotten a lot of different heavy messages, but my most important thing is, one, I always just honest. I don't ever try. This is how I am in person and on social media. I don't ever try to give advice like I wouldn't take myself. And if I don't know something or don't know how to help someone, I just flat out tell them. And if there's options I know that could better suit them, I provide those as well. But I'm just not someone who will just say things to people to make them feel better, or kind of just give them empty advice. I'm always very honest and open. So I have gotten quite a few very deep, like DMs and messages from people, but I approach them as I would like to be approached. It's not just fine. So
I think that's a good way to do it. Even in real life, because I know sometimes it can be like, oh, I'm the vet student, I have to have all the answers. But having the ability to say, you know what, I don't know what the right answer is for you, but let's try and figure out what can work, or maybe point them in a direction, I think is something that'll help you not only now in vet school, but then as you go out into practice as well. And it's just very beneficial for you and for the person involved, because then they can actually find the help that they need, or
and it sets up good habits. Like when we become veterinarians, like there's going to be times where clients are going to ask you probably crazy things, or something's going to come up that you don't know. But the best thing to do is be honest about it and tell them, you know, hey, I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to get the answer for you. Just hang tight. You know, it's not worth lying and getting yourself in just a mess. So I've just been trying to do this all the time.
So then let's go into like this next mentorship program you mentioned. It's called This Is How We Roll. And I honestly love this kind of program. I want to hear more about it. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so This Is How We Roll. I found out about this my first year of vet school, but one of our professors, she, you know, is very passionate about educating and working with the community. And so she started this program where we could work with underserved areas of our community and help kind of educate them more so about science, and get them into science fields, but we incorporate veterinary medicine within that. And so like I kind of stated earlier, we'll do different lessons. Like sometimes we're doing like math lessons, we incorporate like puppies and kittens, like add these kittens, add these puppies, you know. And then we'll do other activities like medicating animals, like how important that is and why animals need medication. And, you know, like, did you know animals use inhalers? And like, just kind of different fun facts like that. Oh, wait, we also do large animal activities. Like we teach them about like swine. And so it just, the lessons are just tailored for different things, but it's an opportunity for the vet students to serve as mentors to people in our community and kind of instill science into them and kind of get them interested in careers that way. So,
and it's also building that relationship between people in the community and medical professionals, where a lot of times there can be distrust, but if you're physically working with someone one-on-one, they tend to then look at veterinary professionals in a more positive light.
Exactly.
Well, I think that is pretty cool. And I think we're, like you said, there's a lot more schools that is starting to pop up more. And I'm really excited to see where that starts to go.
Yes. So if anyone's interested, you can just Google This Is How We Roll Purdue and the site will come up. And it's awesome. There's like picture books that people can buy too if they like want those for like any kids in their families. It's really cool material.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And so the last one that we kind of talked about was Snout School, and this is relatively new, and I know you are one of the representatives for Snout School, so I will let you have the floor.
Yeah, so the Snout School opportunity just kind of came by surprise, which I'm very, very thankful for. I mean, it was one of the positives of social media, so once I got Dr. Christie started, I think Danielle just came across my profile. And kind of saw what I was doing and reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in kind of being one of the vet student representatives. And I was definitely interested because anytime that I can encourage women empowerment, I'm all for. So that's kind of how that started, but it's been great. It's been a good network of like all the awesome women in the veterinary field. It spans like vet students, veterinarians, vet nurses, business or office managers, like social media marketers or marketing people. There's just so many people in this group. It's just amazing, and it's awesome to see that so many of these women in this group are like women that I have looked up to while I've been in vet school. And I just really an honor to be a part of that, and I want to be able to continue the message of like empowering women in this field and showing them that we're capable of anything. And I don't know, just like we just kill it as women. I mean, guys are cool too, but yeah, I just I love Snout School, and Danielle's just awesome and absolutely hilarious. So I really, really have enjoyed it, and I think it's gonna do some really great things.
There's definitely some really good stuff in the works. I'm pretty sure just talking with different people. And I love how one of them it is saying like empowered women empower women. So it's saying that someone who they're kind of maybe at this elevated position, they're able to then help others. And I feel like that transcends all of veterinary medicine and all that we're working towards, like as vet students right now. And just saying that, like the position that we're in, we're able to not really focus on ourselves, but we're able to look at the other people around us and say, all right, how is where I am able to help the next person?
And also like having women around you to help you understand your worth, because this previously was a male dominated field and now it's not. So like it is now a primarily female field, and it's just, I know we're moving towards that kind of view of, maybe clients thinking that they'd rather have a male veterinarian, but I love that this group is like, it's pushing away from that. It's like women have just as many capabilities as men. We deserve the same pay. We just deserve anything a male does. And like, I mean, I like that Snout School is just kind of, it's a group of women empowering women. Exactly. Like I think I see this in a lot of my classmates too. Like they don't know their worth and they don't realize how awesome veterinarians are going to be. And like, if my job is to pump them up and be the hype girl, like I'm all in. I'll be doing that.
That's a pretty fun position to be in too.
Yeah.
So then, to kind of tie it all together, so you've had the opportunities through Snout School, through all these different mentorship programs, where you've gotten to see like what the needs are of the vet students in your school and across the U.S. and almost across the world now that you have your Instagram account. And what do you think some of the biggest needs or wants are of vet students in this day and age?
I guess just to sum it up, I would just say balance. I think vet school is just, no matter where you go to vet school, it's demanding and a lot is asked from you and it's exhausting and it's overwhelming. Like I am still overwhelmed to this point all the time. Like just because, I have an Instagram and I'm starting a blog does not mean I have everything together. No. Like I told you, like I said earlier, it's a process. Life is a process. But yeah, I would say balance is what people are looking for. They want to know that like, hey, I can still be a vet student. I can still, pass my classes, or I mean, yeah, that's my goal, is just really just to pass. But I can, move on to the next year. I can, work on my mental, physical health. I can still have a social life. Like a lot of times they tell you can't do that, but I'm here to tell you definitely can do that. Like tomorrow, I'm going to a concert in Indianapolis, and on like Tuesday I have an anesthesia midterm. Most people are gonna be studying this weekend, but like I just want to live my life, I'm not trying to get an A on that midterm. Like of course I want to know the materials for my future patients, and I will, but getting an A does not indicate how much, like how great of a veterinarian you're going to be. So that's kind of been my mindset in vet school, and it's helped me, and I've gotten to do so many things I wanted to do. And I watch a lot of Netflix still. Like I work out almost every day. I live my life. I don't let vet school dictate it. Even though vet school is a big part of my life, it's not my whole life.
I think you should definitely talk with the previous guest of That Vet Life, Dr. Chatterjee or Shake, because he is the work-life balance specialist, as he likes to call himself
Yeah.
sometimes.
Love that. I love that.
I think that's a really good point. Like I definitely hear that with students. They want to know that they can be a vet student, that they can still enjoy life, because so much, it seems like you get sucked down into this like vortex that is vet school, and then you pop your head out during the summer sometimes and you're like, whoa, there's a world out here. Like,
yeah, exactly. You don't want to lose that world. It's really important to maintain like just your mental health too, because if you don't have your mental health coming out of vet school, imagine how great of a veterinarian are you really going to be. So that's what I always tell people. I'm like, you got to take care of yourself first before you take care of your patients.
Yeah, and I think the other thing besides balance, that at least the vet students that I've talked to so far, is they want mentorship. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, what does mentorship mean for myself to receive, like, when I'm in practice? Because I know right now I have a lot of mentors, that they're, most of them are in practice, or they've recently graduated, so they're in practice. But then, like, how do I become a mentor for the students that are around me? Which, I mean, that's very similar to what you're talking about. And to kind of wrap all of this up, is looking at, how do I use social media to be a mentor to someone? How do I, in my day-to-day interactions, how do I be a mentor to the people that are around me? It may not be someone that I sit down with every single week, but how do I continue to be someone that they feel like they can either go to ask questions, or to look for an answer if I can bring them to someone? Or just looking at, how do I interact with people? That's a big part of mentorship that I feel like we don't always think about too much, is just literally, how do we interact with the day-to-day people? And then the people that are seeing these interactions, how does that impact them? So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that side of mentorship that isn't the verbal mentorship?
That's interesting too, because before, I always think mentorship has to be like a physical, like in-person thing, someone you can like easily, you know, meet up with. But I guess nowadays, with social media being so big, that's why I started Dr. Chrissy, is for mentorship too. And kind of like what you just touched on, like, so I think from my personal view of mentorship, what I think works the best for me, and it's actually what I did a lot in undergrad, because I had a lot of ambassador positions and leadership positions, is to share my experiences. And then when people ask for advice, I give advice, because, I mean, we got to be honest, I'm not necessarily an expert in like how to get into vet school and how to do this and that and how to be the best vet student, because that looks different for everyone. But I can be there to tell people my experiences and what I had to go through, and like what advice I could give that relates to my own experience. But I mean, it's something I'm aware of, that people will take it or leave it. So more of my goal is to like show people like what I'm doing, and kind of tell them more of my hardships too, not just like the successful, like the, you know, the highlight reel. But yeah, I think my approach for mentorship is really just to share experiences, and then open up the floor for conversation and advice, and if people reach out to me. So I usually, anyone that DMs me, I usually try to get back to them no matter what. So
the last one that I was thinking of was then not just how to provide our own experiences for them, but to then help them find a way to find their own answers, and to find and to create their own story out of that, is, I think, the final piece of the puzzle for me of learning what does mentorship look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that kind of wraps up that side of things. And hopefully this is very encouraging for other vet students, just to think about other ways that, how can you be supportive to the vet students that are around you? How can you be a mentor? Maybe get involved in some programs that your university provides. But I want to open the floor to you, Christy. Where can people find you? What can they have to look forward to with Dr. Christy?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So I'm going to just go and say this. You know, vet school is starting. It's, you know, I'm starting surgery in a couple of weeks. So life, you know, life's just crazy. So I vow to try to make an effort to write one blog post a week. I want to be able to put more blog posts on my site, which is www.drchrissy.com. And that's kind of going to be a more in-depth view of any experiences I share, or even if I have some sort of advice I want to share. Like today, I'm planning on publishing my experience in Africa and how people can get involved in that. And so things like that. And I also am really going to try to make a goal to show people how I do study, It's actually very unconventional. I do very weird things. Like I said earlier, I'm very scatterbrained and I can't focus for too long. So I do things like I study in the shower, in the bathtub when I take bubble baths. I'll draw on my walls. Like I do really strange things. So work makes me a very visual, hands-on person. But I kind of want to share the fun, weird things I do and show people that studying doesn't just have to be reading notes. And then, I actually really want to share more of like my meal prepping and kind of the health things I do rather than just straight animal pictures, even though I know people love animal pictures. I kind of want to make it more broad and show people kind of everything I try to do in a picture, which is kind of hard to do in general, but
Those think, yeah, those look like a lot of exciting things that I know I am definitely going to be looking out for in the coming months. But I think we'll wrap it up there then. Thank you so much for being a part and sharing again, like just sharing your experience for other veterinary students to hear, and just talking about what does mentorship even look like amongst vet students. And I wish you the best of luck in this coming year, in the next 2 years, before you become an official DVM.
Well, thank you. And thank you for thinking of me. And I'm just really, really excited to be a part of this podcast. I've seen you do so many of them. So I feel very honored that you thought of me.
Yeah, okay, so guys, definitely go follow Christy. I'll leave her information down below and it'll also be on the post. And if you want to follow along with what's happening with That Vet Life, you can definitely also find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. And we have our little website, which will be linked below. So I guess until next time, guys, we'll see you. Bye.